Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Galp Energia's third quarter 2014 results conference call and strategy execution update. I will now pass the floor to Mr. Pedro Dias, Head of Strategy and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Galp Energia's third quarter results conference call. Joining me today is our CEO, Manuel Ferreira de Oliveira, our CFO, Felipe Silva, and Otelo Ruivo, our Investor Relations Officer. As usual, Manuel will begin with our execution updates, and Felipe will cover our third quarter results. At the end, we will be available for Q&A. Please bear in mind that we may be making several forward-looking statements, including about our plans and expectations. Actual results and outcomes may differ materially due to factors which are presented on the disclaimer shown at the beginning of our presentation. I will now pass the floor to Manuel. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro. Good morning to each and all of you, and thank you for being with us this morning. As you are aware, we had some recent changes in our executive management team as a consequence of Steve White's resignation. It was in this context that Thor Christiansen was appointed to be in charge of our exploration and production division. Thor has an extensive career in the oil and gas industry. We are most pleased to have him with us in our executive management team. I'm sure that Thor will successfully lead our highly motivated E&P division. I also like to take this opportunity to, once again, thank Stephen White for all his contribution to the growth of our E&P activities over the last couple of years, and we wish him good luck on his forthcoming endeavors. Now, let me start with an update on the execution of our main upstream projects. I will start with Lula-Iracema in the Brazilian Santos Basin. As you might remember, commercial production in the Lula field started at the end of 2010, with FPSO Cidade Angra dos Reis only 4 years, I would emphasize again, only 4 years after the Tupi discovery. Today, we have three production units installed in the field. These are, for us, particularly exciting times. After having the first FPSO at full capacity for a couple of years, we have accomplished another two important milestones since September. FPSO Cidade Paraty reached full capacity in mid-September, 15 months after starting production, 3 months ahead of our plans. This faster ramp-up was only possible due to the excellent reservoir characteristics, with well flow rates of around 30,000 barrels a day. The timely ramp-up period was also a result of hard work from those involved in this operation, and I would like to take this opportunity to congratulate all of them that made this happen. It was unequivocally a job well done. We all remember the concerns expressed by many in relation to the timely installation of the two SDR systems designed and put into operation by Subsea 7. It was a successful, innovative technology delivered for us on time and meeting all the required performance objectives. Additionally, we recently had another very important milestone. It was the start of production of the FPSO Cidade de Mangaratiba in Iracema South. This is the third unit deployed in the field and the first with the capacity to process 150,000 barrels a day, 8 million standard cubic meters of gas a day, and 264,000 barrels of water injection capacity. The unit started production in October 14th with a producer well which we expect to reach flow rates of around 30,000 barrels a day. However, for the time being, and until an injector well that a gas injector well is connected in December and the reinjection systems are fully commissioned, production of this first well is being restricted. Out of the 16 wells to be connected to Cidade Mangaratiba, of which 8 are producers and 8 are injectors, 12 have already been drilled, and among these, 3 were already completed. Of these, 1 is the injector well to be connected to the FPSO in December that I referred to you before. Moving forward, we expect that the next producer well to be connected in early next year, and the ramp-up of this unit could take around 18 months, with plateau production expected to during the first half of 2016. I have to say that most likely our 18 months ramp-up period for Cidade Mangaratiba might end up to be conservative, but we prefer to remain prudent for the moment. Now let me move ahead for the next upcoming units. The hull of Cidade de Itaguaí, our FPSO number 4, is ready to leave the Cosco shipyard in China to the Brasfels shipyard in Brazil for integration works, and is expected to be in the Iracema North on time for the first oil during the fourth quarter of 2015. As for Cidade Maricá and Cidade Saquarema, our FPSOs number 5 and 6, works are ongoing in the Shangxi shipyard in China, and we are positive that these chartered units will start production in the first half of 2016 as planned. Regarding the additional FPSO units, named replicants, works are ongoing both in Brazil and in the Chinese shipyards. In this regard, the consortium is fully aware of situations that may induce some delays on the contract of delivering of FPSO components, for which mitigating actions are being prepared. Our current expectation is that potential delays from any additional works should not affect the schedule of the first oil for these units. Still on Lula, the consortium has discussions ongoing on the unitization process for the Lula South area. These negotiations are ongoing both with Petrobras and PPSA. With regards to Yara, we are developing all the necessary appraisal activities that will support the development plan of the area. We expect to issue the declaration of commerciality by year-end. The extended well test that started in June in the Yara West location has been showing positive indications and should last until the end of the year. I'm happy to register the excellent results of this EWT so far, with average flow rates of around 29,000 barrels per day. At the same time, we are drilling an appraisal well in the eastern area of the field, and drilling should be concluded this quarter. These results will further support our understanding of this part of the field, as well as the process of unitization with Yara Intorno in the transfer of rights area. The discussions concerning this unitization process have already been initiated with Petrobras. The consortium will have 6 months to present the development plan of Yara to ENP after the declaration of commerciality that will take place by the end of this year and to be submitted to ENP. Moving now to BMS 24. During this quarter, we continued with appraisal activities with the conclusion of the Apollonia well, which confirmed hydrocarbons with the same fluid characteristics as those discovered in Jupiter and Bracuí. We are now conducting an important DST test in Bracuí, and we expect to spud an additional appraisal well until the end of the year. The results of this DST and this appraisal well are extremely important. The new well, to be named Elida, will contribute to the increase of our knowledge of the Jupiter area. As we have already stated, the consortium is fully committed to de-risking this major reservoir, and you should expect the appraisal campaign in 2020 in BMS 24 to continue throughout 2015. I remember that we have to declare the commerciality of this field throughout 2016. Still in the Santos Basin, I will refer now to the ongoing appraisal activities in BMS-8. In September, the consortium resumed the first stage of drilling of the Carcará extension well. As you know, this well will be an important to help us understand the dimensions and quality of the Carcará discovery. However, I want to let you know that this well will only be concluded in the second part of 2015, as it was decided to use a secondary rig with the managed pressure drilling system to safely drill into the high pressure reservoir. Consequently, the DST that needs to be done in this well will take place only in the second half of next year, and as such, you should not expect any major news flows from this field until then. Now let me move from the Santos Basin in Brazil to the Rovuma Basin in Mozambique. We have now concluded the exploration and appraisal campaign of the license. Coral 4 was the last well to be concluded in August, confirming the high quality of the reservoir in the area. I suppose that everyone in the industry is well aware of the high quality of these reservoirs in the Rovuma Basin. We will now concentrate our efforts on the development phase of this prolific area. The Mozambican Parliament has approved the enabling law, which delegates in the government the negotiation of the framework to develop the Rovuma project. We expect that approval of the related decree law that will establish the special conditions applied to the project will take place before the end of the year. Regarding the development activities, we have now three consortia contracted to carry out the FEED and design to submit an EPC contract for the FLNG option to the Coral area. We expect to receive these offers during the first half of 2015. Based upon them, we'll take the decisions about how to proceed. Regarding the development of the Mamba Reservoir, based on onshore liquefaction units, the consortium has already launched an invitation to tender for an EPC with four entities pre-selected, with offers due to be received in the first half of 2015. And these two works, both the EPC proposals and the EPC for both Coral and Mamba, will be the basis for the future development of the Coral and Mamba. Now let me go over to our downstream and gas activities. After an historically low refining margins in Europe during the first half of the year, finally, in the third quarter, market conditions improved on our benchmarking margins to around $2.3 per barrel. And this was the basis for the improvement of our results in this area. We took advantage of these market conditions with our hydrocracking facility and our FCC running at full capacity throughout the entire quarter. And we have been able to improve our premium over benchmark by optimizing the crude and VGO intakes. This was only possible due to the operational flexibility of our units and the quality of our logistics infrastructure. This recovery of the refining margins and the positive contribution of our marketing business supported the improvement of our results in the oil downstream activities. In fact, I would say that even during adverse times in Iberia, we have been able to maintain our market share in a very competitive and difficult market. However, I must emphasize that we continue to be cautious on the refining environment and its future impacts on our downstream results, since the existence of the refining overcapacity in Europe is still evident and uncertainty remains in the market. On the gas side, in addition to operating efficiently our regulated assets and our Iberian commercial activities, we are sustaining our international energy structured sales with good contribution for our results, even if not as strong as the last quarters, as previously expected and flagged out on our last short-term outlook. We are taking all the actions on our gas and power business to ensure that the results we are presenting are sustainable for the forthcoming few years. With this, I now pass the floor to Philippe to go over the results of the quarter. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Manuel. Good morning. Starting with the P&L on slide 14, group EBITDA was 379 million euros in the quarter, up 21% year on year. And the highlights being the production increase in Brazil and the recovery of European refining margins. E&P EBITDA was up 19% to 131 million, with increased production more than offsetting the fall in average sales prices in this lower crude price environment. Working interest production reached almost 32,000 barrels per day, mainly driven by the contribution of FPSO number 2, which had been ramping up over the last 15 months and reached full capacity at the end of the quarter. Net entitlement reached 28,000 barrels per day, with Brazil up 61% year on year and already accounting for about three quarters of group production. Realized sale price was down, with Brent reaching the lowest level of the year during the quarter. During this period, production costs were stable year on year, with higher production costs in Brazil offset by lower production costs in Angola following the decommissioning of the Quito FPSO at the end of last year. In unit terms, production costs decreased 20% per barrel due to the increased weights of Brazil and the higher utilization of our production capacity. Refining and marketing EBITDA increased to 144 million euros, benefiting from the recovery of European refining margins. The marketing business also increased its contribution to group results year on year on the back of improved operating efficiencies in Portugal, Spain, and Africa. Finally, gas and power EBITDA was down 18% year on year to 99 million euros in the quarter, with lower volumes of LNG traded in the international markets. Our regulated infrastructure and power businesses maintained their stable contribution to EBITDA during the period. Group EBIT in the third quarter reached 243 million euros, reflecting the improved EBITDA, as well as the reduction in depreciation and abandonment costs in Angola, and also lower provisions in the marketing business. Refining and marketing EBIT for the first 9 months has now almost reached break-even. Below the EBIT line, we would only highlight the increased amount of taxes, mostly as a result of higher production. Our balance sheet on slide 15. Our working capital was down 175 million euros, driven by a reduction in receivables after the one-off effects of the cargoes sold in late June, and this effect has now waned down. This was expected and was well flagged during our Q2 conference call. Net debt was stable in the quarter, even with the payment of the September interim dividend. Considering the outstanding loan to Sinopec as cash, net debt was 1.6 billion euros, or about 1.3 times net debt to EBITDA. On slide 16, we have CapEx, which amounted to 314 million euros in the quarter, about 90% of which was allocated to E&P. The investments there were mainly allocated to development activities in Lula Iracema, in particular to the drilling of development wells and the construction of FPSOs and subsea systems. Exploration and appraisal CapEx reached 94 million euros, mostly allocated to appraisal activities in Yara, in Mozambique, and of course Morocco. Our cash flow statement on slide 17 should really be looked at on the basis of the entire 9 months of 2014 versus 9 months of 2013. The quarterly figures within 2014 were quite volatile, also because of the planned maintenance of the larger Sines refinery earlier this year. So comparing 9 months versus 9 months, the key takeaways are higher cash flow from operations on the back of higher EBITs, IFRS, this year, and better working capital management. We also have higher CapEx, and that is even considering the sale of the CLH stake last year. We have lower interest expenses, even if the debt level was higher and the maturities have been extended. And we also have higher dividends. On slide 18, you see that at the end of the third quarter, the average maturity of our debt was extended to 3.8 years, with two-thirds of our gross debt now due from 2018 onwards, and with about 40% now on a fixed rate basis. Our liquidity remains high at 3.4 billion euros. Finally, our usual guidance for this upcoming quarter. We are expecting Q4 production of around 35,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, supported by the production plateau of FPSO number 2 in Lula Northeast and by the contribution of FPSO number 3. We are expecting Iberian oil product sales to remain stable year on year. Natural gas volumes are expected to be stable quarter on quarter, as we don't anticipate material changes to LNG volumes traded in the international markets. With this, I conclude our presentation for today, and we are available for Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Please limit yourself to 2 questions at a time. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal. We will now take our first question from Aysam Rashid from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for the presentation. Two questions from my side. Firstly, just wanted to get your thoughts with regards to obviously the environment that we're in right now and concerns, you know, clearly very much on evolution of the oil price from current levels. Could you just give us a sense of how you're thinking about this internally, whether when it comes to CapEx plans, particularly for the next 1 to 2 years, whether there is kind of scope for you to be flexible around some of those plans and whether, for example, you know, Mozambique sort of being delayed or pushed out would be something you would consider, or whether there are other sort of other levers in your current plans. Second question I had is just on the downstream and sustainability of the result. Clearly 3Q very strong. You mentioned Manuel the cautiousness you still have around the environment. Perhaps you could give us specifically just some color around 4Q, what you've seen so far in the quarter. We're now almost a month in. Are there signs that we should see, you know, this kind of maintained for some time? And any color around that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, Aysam, very good morning to you, and thank you for your two questions. No? The first one, I wish I could answer to it. If I knew the evolution of the price of oil, I probably had a different job. And as far as CapEx, as I told you, we are now starting up, particularly in Mozambique, the feeds and engineering, and only then can we make more definitive statements. I hope that in our Capital Markets Day, we already have some thoughts about it, but at this stage, our plan is our plan. No? We don't see this variation in prices should detonate such a short-term review of our numbers. No.
Okay.
As far as the second question on refinery margins, we prudently are telling you that so far so good. So as far as the dam is going, We see the margins slightly declining, but day by day we're still in a level that makes us happy, no? So I do not get overexcited, but I am not pessimistic as well.
Great, thank you.
These are my answers. Thank you, Ethan.
We will now take our next question from Brendan Warne for BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. It's Brendan Warne from BMO Capital Markets. Just one, actually two questions, and it's more just clarification of a couple of statements. Just firstly, the statement on break-even for R&M over the nine-month period and just expectations over the next outlook for 2015, and then also a comment on throughput in terms of the hydrocracker, just in terms of utilization or run rate for this quarter, what we could see going into the next couple of quarters, please.
Brendan, thank you for your two questions, and let me try and answer them. The first one has to do with the break-even on R&M. As you see, we've got an EBIT line. We are nearly break-even at this moment, at EBIT line. Although I emphasize with a very well-needed contribution at the EBITDA level. Remember that we are minimizing CapEx in this activity, and it is generating cash flow to support our investment program. So, as you can see from the results, ceteris paribus, with the 2.3 benchmark refinery margins, we are breaking even. I think this is an answer to your question, through the quarter, through the nine-month period. We hope and really believe that in the midterm, at least, the benchmark refinery margins will be well above the $2.3 per barrel. Your question number two is also related with refining. You've asked what about the realization of our run rates.
one characteristic of our refining system, it's flexibility, one, and two, the quality of our logistics. We are able to import Vigio if we've got opportunistic operations to make, and one of the things that we've done in the last quarter, and being fair throughout the year, is that as soon as we see Vigio that is competitive with acquisition of crude oil and running the crude oil through the distillation infrastructure, if the economics are at, so indicate, we reduce the run of crude oil, but maintain always the FCC and hydrocracker at full capacity through the acquisition of Vigio. And we've done that successfully in the third Q of this year with good results, as you can see from the premium of our refining margin versus the benchmark that we published in our accounts.
Good, thank you.
Good question, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Oswald Clint from Sanford Bernstein. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. Just on FPSO Mangaroa Teba, it seemed to come in ahead of schedule, which is good, and obviously has the kind of China hull construction part of the formula. So that's, you know, using China and Brazil seems to work quite well. Just want to, so what's this, you know, should we expect any different for the next three FPSOs that kind of have that China angle to them? And is there a scope to kind of use this, you know, to China flexibility further down the line with some of the later FPSOs? And I think you also mentioned some mitigating factors that might help you circumvent any potential delays in some of your prepared comments. Could you just elaborate on those, please? Thank you.
Oswald, thank you for your questions, and I apologize for this interval, but this is the equipment that I'm using. I'm not trained to use it well. No, I apologize for that. So, back to your question, yes, I do agree with your comment that the combination China-Brazil is working well, no? And the consortium, I would say that, is using that, I think, in a very wise manner. And for the next three FPSOs, we see, as I've referred in my introduction remarks, that combination will keep working. The issue starts on the what we named the replicants, and where decisions are at this moment being taken to mitigate any delays that we are observing at this moment. And the working plans that we have, and I cannot say more than this, is to ensure that the first oil of the first two replicants that we will need on site in the second part of 2016 will be according to plan. That's the work that we are presently doing. And I think this is what your question, wasn't it?
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Michael Alsford from Citi. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking my questions. Just wanted to follow up on the last question, actually. Could you maybe talk a little bit more about the replicants, though, that are obviously being built in Brazil? You know, when the timing of first oil is for those vessels, and you know, really, what have the challenges been so far, and how you maybe see those being mitigated? Because I guess, you know, moving the couple of earlier FPSOs to China seems to have got around the problem, but I just wondered whether that is a possibility for later vessels, or whether you will have to continue to build them within Brazil. That's the first question. I guess just the second question, related to the schedule around Brazil, is you know, I think one of the challenges will be, you know, partners in a lower oil price environment funding the plans for pre-salt Brazil. And I just wondered, given obviously the recent election results in Brazil, how you see that risk, you know, particularly yourselves, but also more importantly Petrobras, your partner, of delivering on that plan going forwards financially. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Let me start to the your first question, which is easier than the second. I'm sure that you admit that, no? But so the forthcoming three FPSOs would be manufactured fundamentally in China and assembled part of them in Brazil, and they will be leased. So we have no issue in the forthcoming three units, the one that will be commissioned by the end of 2015 and the two to be commissioned in 2016. So what then? But in 2016 we will have another two. These two will be replicants made in Brazil. Let me tell you why they are named replicants. They are made replicants, they are absolutely equal, and they have basically the hulls plus five subsystems, and each subsystem is manufactured by the same supplier, and it is then supplied to another entity that assembles the five subsystems, so integrated them in the hull. So what is happening is that some of the subcontractors of these subsystems are, for different reasons, are now indicating some delays. What we are now doing is negotiating with them and redistributing the work so that the compliance, the delivery time is not affected. Additionally, a scenario that part of them could be manufactured abroad to neutralize, if it is confirmed that the target dates are not possible, I say that this scenario is on the table. So the focus of our engineering and procurement teams are now to ensure that the mitigating actions being discussed are effective, and we will have the two FPSOs replicants in the second part of 2016. And we are optimistic about that, let me tell you that. Now the second question is the most difficult one. I see that what I see is the people at the divisions of Petrobras that we work with, they are highly professional, they are working very hard to meet the targets. And I see no reason why the production targets or the production objectives of Petrobras will change. Brazil needs that growth, and because the projects we are in are the most attractive ones in the Petrobras portfolio. So with that, we are relaxed. But as everybody, we are always waiting and see.
Okay. Thanks, Manuel. That's very helpful.
We will now take our next question from Philippe Rosa from BESI. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My first question relates to IARA. We are very close to the declaration of commerciality of this important field, and so far you have only sanctioned two FPSOs. Could you update us on whether the appraisal activity that you have carried out so far this year already allows you to sanction another FPSO? What is currently your expectation in terms of recoverable resources that you could announce in terms at the time of the declaration of commerciality? So this would be the first question. The second relates to walk testing at Lula. Okay, we have now been to almost another year where you have been testing this technology. Could you update us on this front? Do you still feel confident that you will be able to increase your recovery factors at a slow pace over the next few years due to this technology? Thank you very much.
Okay, Philippe, thank you. I'm still struggling with the little equipment I have in my hands. I apologize once again. Philippe, taking the first question as far as IARA, we are at this moment producing in one well 29,000 barrels a day. That well is located in an area called IARA West. We are at this moment drilling a well in IARA Central. In the border with IARA Central and IARA East to better understand the homogeneity of that area. and we are discussing the unitization concepts that will apply to this area. What seems more likely to happen is that we will look at Iara as the greater Iara reservoir. Petrobras has been extremely successful in their exploration in the Iara Entorno that was transferred to them in the rights issue program a couple of years ago, and we are putting everything together. So the declaration of commerciality most likely will happen together. And this is the phase we are in. So we are discussing the location of PSOs, looking at the total, including our own participation in the core Iara reservoir. So I would prefer not to go beyond this because we are negotiating that. In order for this to be professionally completed, we need to do this well that is now being drilled. There is now one well being drilled and another one programmed for early next year. Remember that we have, once we declare commerciality, we have 6 months to present a development plan. We still do not have all the data to have a reliable development plan, which we will have to have by June, July next year. I hope that in our capital markets day and early next year, we will be sharing more concrete views about that.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the WAG project, you, Philippe, know me, and you know how enthusiastic I personally am about this project. As a petroleum engineer, if you want to call me that, I am extremely confident about the results of Iara. What has happened is that due to operational reasons, we have not effectively executed the program as it was originally conceived. And there were good reasons for that not to happen, which were operational. So we cannot present now objective data on the effectiveness of the WAG project. But we know where it has been applied elsewhere. We know the laboratory results, and we know the analytical models, and I'm fully confident that through WAG technology will gradually increase the recovery factor of the reservoir.
So just to be sure, so this means that this year there would not be any changes to the resources of Lula based on WAG, just because you are not being able to perform the tests as you expected to be able, right? Is that it?
Philippe, the reserves, resources, and so on that we communicate to the market are the ones that come out from our reserve auditors. No? So I would not want to comment on what they are going to do. No? It's their job to do so. From what I told you, I have no expectation that reserves would be reviewed as a consequence of the ongoing WAG project, because of some operational issues related with that project. Okay. Basically, priority of allocation of resources to the project.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil.
We will now take our next question from Bruno Silva from BPI. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. First of all, congratulations for the excellent delivery this quarter. I still have a couple of questions pending. The first one is more on strategic side. I'd like to understand that with the current oil price environment that is well below your assumption for the 14-18 period presented last March, I'd like to understand if this oil price level is maintained, what could be the consequences in terms of, first of all, considering the leverage of Galp, what would be the actions you'd be ready to take? Would you please try to make it more clear to us whether you would prefer to maintain or increase the current shareholder remuneration policy, or would Galp be ready to accelerate the asset rotation within its portfolio? And actually, just to remind, in the capital markets day, you mentioned that possibility, but with small things. the interest rate environment and the good news from the European banking sector probably are backing or supporting valuations of regulated assets. Is the dossier of the regulated infrastructure in Portugal presenting a short-term opportunity for selling a minority stake or not? The second question, if I may, very quickly, in gas sourcing business, is GALP pushing for increasing the bet on expanding the sourcing of gas to boost the supply business, or should we take the guidance provided in the capital markets today, or should it be understood as the level of exposure the company is comfortable with going forward? Thank you very much.
Bruno, thank you for your questions. Back to oil price environment, you see, none of the projects, the material, the big projects that we are involved in, are their economics is at risk with the present price environment. No? I want you to know that we test these projects at price of oil, crude oils lower than the present ones. No? I want you to remember that the consortium of BMS 11, to refer just the Lula project, has stated in several occasions that our break-even price of oil in terms of remunerating capex at the cost of money at about $40 a barrel, $35 to $40 a barrel. So the projects themselves. As far as our balance sheet, I'm going to repeat what we have said, is that we will continuously look at our balance sheet. I remember that Philippe told you that our debt to EBITDA presently is 1.3 times, so we feel extremely comfortable with that ratio at this moment. Again, our debt to equity is within the industry standards, so we feel comfortable on that. Moving forward, if we, due to exogenous variables or endogenous events, we see that our debt to EBITDA could become higher than 2, we will reactivate mitigating actions that you are familiar with. As far as whether we should accelerate them or anticipate them, that is a strategic move that is always part of our thinking, ongoing thinking process, and those concepts, we prefer to share them once a year in our capital markets day. So I would not want to make this presentation of quarterly resources as a strategic review. As far as the gas, and I'll give pass the word to Philippe to complement this answer. As far as gas sourcing, we have today a set of contracts. We also are active in acquiring additional cargoes here and there, depending on whether the opportunities arrive. If you notice that this year, so far, we sold 50% of our gas acquisition was traded internationally, which is quite an achievement, and we are gradually increasing our exposure to this activity. What we do is the main characteristics of our strategies, not to expose us to excessive risk. So it's typically operations that are nearly risk-free. And to the first question, I can see that Philippe is prepared to complement my answer, which I thank.
Bruno, your question on our leverage and whether we should do something on the back of lower oil prices. If you recall, the 2 years where our balance sheet would be under more stress, it would be 15 and 16, because we are expending all the capex now, and the big hike in production only kicks in late 2016. Now, we're fully funded, our ratios won't go over 2 times anyways, but in 15 and 16, our production is still relatively modest. So we are, if you look at impact, if you assume that lower oil prices is good for the consumers, so people will drive more in general. So it's good for our downstream marketing business. it tends to be for refining margins where we are exposed multiple times to those variations versus production in 2015. Net-net, there's no direct consequence or leverage in 15 and 16 from a lower oil price. And this quarter is a good indication of that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bruce, let me add one comment. No. We are well aware that our contracts start terminating around 2020 and forward, and it's a duty of our marketing team not to wait for 2019 to negotiate the contracts. Effectively, they are already working very hard on that. Will not wait for the 2018-19 to extend those contracts. That's our base strategy, I can tell you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Matt Lofting from Nomura. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks. Two questions, please, if I could. Firstly, just coming back to refining, if you could comment on the extent to which you've been able to hedge forward the margins of September and October, at least for the rest of Q4 and perhaps into the first part of 2015, whether or not that's been possible in the market or not would be helpful. And then secondly, just coming back to working capital, the sort of normalization of the balance has clearly helped in the third quarter. Just wondered if there's scope for any further gains from that perspective into year end, particularly with the oil price lower, or whether that working cap correction is largely done as of the end of Q3. Thanks.
Thank you, Matt. I take the first question, and Philippe will take the second. What we do, you see, we believe that we are in the business as a vertically integrated company. Our shareholders or our investors expect us to be exposed to the risks of the business. However, in terms of refining, we are prudently hedging some volumes. No, I repeat it again, prudently hedging. To the limit of 10% of the volume. So we remain 90% totally exposed at the refinery margins. And that's a kind of prudent strategy that we are making, in the understanding that it would be frustrating for our shareholders for us not to put on the table the real refinery margins if they go up, and we expect they understand that if the refinery margins go down, that we cannot present as good results. But that's my answer. As far as Philippe, can you complement that? Thank you.
Matt, one more word on hedging. In our Q3 numbers, our financial results have been hit by about €7 million in the quarter, so mark-to-market of derivatives on refining margins. So the margins is way up in the EBITDA, but our hedges under financial income is hit by €7.3 million negative. On working capital for the rest of the year, now we believe the end of Q3, we have reached normalized level and pretty much all the big items within working capital, clients, stock, suppliers. So we're back at normalized levels. We don't expect major changes. Bear in mind, we publish numbers in euros, and the stronger dollar mitigates some of the impact of the lower Brent. Overall, expect limited changes from Q3 numbers. Thank you.
Okay, many thanks.
We will now take our next question from Lydia Rainforth from Barclays. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks, and good afternoon, gentlemen. A couple of questions, if I could. The first one, Manuel, have you asked Tor Christiansen to do anything differently as head of upstream to what was being done previously? I'm just wondering if there is any change in emphasis there. And then secondly, I think more for Philippe, the discount on the sales price in the upstream was much lower than I thought it would be in terms of the fall from where we were in the third quarter last year. I'm just wondering, what sort of oil discount to Brent do you expect your realized sale price to settle at on a long-run basis? And then just one prompted by something you said earlier, have you actually seen volumes at the pump pick up with the fall in the oil price coming through? I'm just wondering if that's something you've actually seen so far in the fourth quarter. Thank you.
Lydia, good morning, and thank you for your questions. The first question is extremely simple to answer. Christensen will do his job as in the continuation of the project that we have. The agenda is not of a new director. The agenda is the agenda of the company, you know? So, and in his recruitment process, he was well briefed about what we are doing. And obviously we will welcome any good contribution to improve the quality of our agenda. So that's how we see what I see going forward. It's a good professional. We expect him to bring some additional value to our corporation. As far as the second question, we have a discount on Brent that is a function of the percentage of gas that it is in our barrel. We have publishing BOEs, and sometimes we are injecting more gas than others, and that has an effect on the average value of our BOE. So referring to just the barrel of oil, at this stage we are selling our oil FOB FPSO in a midterm agreement that we have with Petrobras. We are now, we are having a discount on Brent in the range of $3.5 to $4 a barrel on oil. Going forward, what we are doing is what we have to do. The volumes that I put in together are already big enough for us to have a DP unit on place that will be able to lift the volumes ourselves and market them on the market. And this is the activity that our trading team is now developing. So we hope to have sooner rather than later our own logistics on the Santos Basin to be the direct sailors or sellers of crude oil that we produce. And I want you to know that when we have an EWT working, an EWT is a very transient production and that exists only for a short period of time, the discount on rent is higher. Because of the logistics. Effectively, it is $1 per barrel higher than under a stable operation. A higher discount, I would say. And I hope I have answered the two questions you asked, Lydia.
Yeah, thank you. That's hugely helpful.
Okay, thank you, Lydia. Bye-bye.
We will now take our next question from Anish Kapadia from TPH. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, good afternoon. Just on Brazil, first of all, I was wondering if I could clarify by you talked about getting to full capacity on Lula, whether you mean that's the full 120,000 barrels a day or it's more like around 90% of that level, which I think the Lula pilot is running at. And then kind of going forward into 2015, could you just lay out the schedule of when you expect the wells to be tied in at what kind of interval over 2015 for FPSO 3? And then I had questions on the downstream. I was wondering if you could give what was the contribution in the third quarter from falling oil prices in the marketing division. I think generally you get a benefit when oil prices are falling. And just on the refining side of things, we've seen kind of heavy discounts for Kurdish crude in the market. Is that something that you've been looking at using? Thank you.
Anish, thank you for your questions. Now, starting with Brazil, when we say when we say full capacity means that we can be operating, we've got all the infrastructure in place to operate at 100% capacity. However, on a continuous basis, you have to assume that is not every piece of equipment is always 100% available. So in our plans, we assume that we have 90 to 95% availability of the total production capacity. So if you have a 100,000 barrels a unit production facility, it will be producing 90 to 95. We apply the same for the 120 and for the 150. So FPSO number three, the one that is concrete to you, we have guided, because this is what the consortium agreed in our formal plan, to have a ramp-up period of 18 months. We do not guide on the connection of each, the timing of each well. That has to do with weather conditions, sometimes availability of PLSVs. What we have is a master plan that tells us when we should have it fully loaded. Obviously, the work is to do it in a shorter period of time. It's not a guidance. If you ask my opinion, I would say that we'll be able to have it at full capacity within 15 months. Will we be able to do it? There are the exogenous variables that can limit this feasible objective. I think this is for the second question has to do with the reduction in prices and impact of our business. When the prices are reduced in the market division, typically the demand picks up. No? But the correlation is not direct. No? We are in Iberia going through a turbulent times in terms of the market. I would not expect any demand driven by reduction of prices, because the government will put taxes on it, you know, to raise the prices again. So we look at this prudently. This is why we are focused on reducing costs, optimizing our logistics infrastructure, and ensuring that we are good operators. We are not counting on an increase in unit margins in our marketing division. I think I answered your question, Dennis.
Sorry, just clarify. So what I was meaning on the marketing side of things is, I think in the past you've talked about a time lag effect that you had when, you know, oil prices have been rising. It's kind of caused a negative impact on your marketing results. So I'm just wondering, have you got a kind of converse positive impact? And then the second part of that was just kind of related to the refining side. Have you been using any, or are you looking to use any Kurdish crude in your refineries, just given the large discounts you're seeing? You know, are you able to do that? Thank you.
So the first question is to do with the what we call decalage. But in terms of replacement cost, that is minimized, you know. So you see that very intensively in our IFRS accounts. At replacement cost, basically we work as a pipeline. However, we have what we have is in Portugal we sell ex refinery our products at the average price of the Platts quotation in the previous week. You can see that if the prices are going up, we as refiners make a small margin because of it. We lose a small margin because of it. If the prices go down, we make a small margin. So this is where we are. That has to do with the pricing arrangements at our ex-refinery projects. In Spain, for instance, we buy the Spanish refineries sell their prices at every each day's quotation. So we have that tradition in Portugal, and we have not changed it yet. but this is a small number, I would say, unless the change is very drastic, which is not happening that way. And that's, I think, the if you're asking us whether we are buying crude oil from Kazakhstan, at presently, no. The answer is no. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Henri Patricot from UBS. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yes, hello everyone. Just one quick question from me on Mozambique. You've given us an update on the FID and the EPC process. I was wondering if your estimate around the timing of startup has changed in any way. Are you still comfortable with the 2019 date? Thank you.
Okay. Henry, I keep struggling with the little thing I have in my hand. But to your question, the Mozambican, presently, you see, we are bound to the plans of the consortium. Presently, we will have first gas from a conceptual FLNG facility by the end of 2019, first gas from onshore facilities in 2020. But these are indicative objectives. What happens is that we are now doing the engineering and we are bidding for the EPC contracts. No? That's what's going on. We will receive for the FLNG project data, all the EPC timing and investments in the second quarter of next year, and for the onshore projects in the third quarter. So only then can we review the timing of first gas in this country. At this moment, what we have is a conceptual objective. What I can do other than this is speculate, which we should not do.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Henry.
We will now take our next question from Amish Clark from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my question. I learned to press my buttons a bit earlier to get up the queue. But a few things just to ask quickly. First of all, just on Iara. I've read in places that the quality of the crude has not flowed as well. I wondered if you could maybe tell us a little bit more about what you know initially and if there's any risks to the EWT. Second, on Brazil, I wanted just to ask you a little bit more about BMS-24 and the Apollonia well. When you say it's got similar characteristics to Jupiter, could you clarify the sort of oil-gas content, potential economics, and how excited you are about that, basically commercializing Jupiter, and where that sits in Petrobras's kind of priority list? And then just finally, sort of more top-down, wanted to ask you about CapEx, particularly in light of your new head of exploration and production. I'm sorry to hear about the dry holes in Morocco. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about, A, the direction we can expect exploration CapEx to go in, given there seems to be more of a focus on appraisal, and as well as the direction, potentially the geography, we can see that. Will it be a focus on Brazil still? And finally, just you've mentioned that a lot of the sort of efficiency improvements and cost savings. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that in terms of where that's coming from? Is it sort of rig rates? Is it cost of equipment? I know you mentioned it's time and the money saved. Will you reinvest that, or will you kind of use that to bolster your balance sheet or pay back to shareholders? Sorry to ask a string of questions towards the end of the call.
Anish, good morning to you, and thank you.
Good morning.
You is quite a lot of questions. Let me see whether I'd be able to pick them all. Let's start with Yara now. You see, the first dynamic test of Yara is being taking place now with EWT, which is in Yara West region. No? And it is indicating, has been producing for months, 29 to 30, actually. A couple of days ago, it was at 30,000 barrels a day. Practically no CO2, which is a surprise, which now is not a surprise, but it was a surprise at the very beginning. And and with very low gas to oil ratio. So far, good news. What we have is in Yara Central, is where the, a lot of big resource base is there. We still have unknowns to be answered, to be removed. And this is why this well that we are drilling now is important, to assess the Yara Central. And the forthcoming one, well, the forthcoming one is also important. So we have nothing else to add to it. No. Yara is a large reservoir. We, from the very beginning, we knew that it was, tight in relative terms. When compared with other reservoirs in the area, it was a tight reservoir, but surprisingly, we are having high flow rates. So whether these high flow rates are just in hot spots or are all over the field, that's an unknown that we have today. So what we are being is prudent in extrapolating the 20,000 barrels a day of the present EWT to the full field. And that's the reason why we need additional appraisal before we put forward the development plan.
Okay.
So going to the MS-24, we are going through at this stage. Actually, we are doing the first DST in Jupiter. So it's the first dynamic production of Jupiter, the first time that we will have the fluids in a ship, so that we can see how the fluids flow perform with all the complexities associated with to this three phase fluid in this project. So we'll be sooner rather than later in the next couple of weeks announcing or sharing with investors the results of this DST. We are right now starting the project, and it would not be proper for me to comment on them. What I'm being corrected by a friend of mine is that, by Philippe, is that I said that EWT was 20,000 barrels. It's 29,000 barrels a day. So if I said so, I was wrong, no? Now, back to, so we have an excellent hot spot in this EWT. And the question is, how many hotspots like that do we have in the Yara field? That's the unknown that we have. Going to CAPEX and to the whether we will be changing our CAPEX guidance. We have this year and next year for exploration and appraisal about 25% of our E&P budget. One thing that we have committed in last Capital Markets Day is that we would not open new exploration areas that implied drilling, unless it was previously committed, during the period between now and 2017. So that has been decided more than a year ago, and we'll be sticking to it independently of having with us Thor or not. No? That's in our plans, and that's what we will do.
Right.
So we will continue our exploration activity, but more focused in acquiring acreage with minor CAPEX commitments in this period, because we are clearly aware that we need to have developed prospects for post-2018 phase of our company, and that they should be developed by now. Back to cost efficiency and improvements, I think it's becoming component of our culture. Every year, and we have cost improvement exercises, and that is and efficiency improvements in the different areas of our corporation, and we'll continue to do so. Typically, when we have a CAPEX as presented by our business units, we look at them and say, how can we do the same with at least 10% less CAPEX? And we are continuously challenged project by project in which we are involved. That's more than an objective, is a culture that we want to impregnate in our company. You know? And we count with it. We count with those results. And so far, we have achieved them. Thank you, Anish.
Thank you so much for your answer.
We will now take our last question from Thomas Adel from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Two questions, please. One on Mozambique. If you can give an update on how many HOAs you actually have in place, if you can reveal the volume separately for A, the floating project, and B, the onshore part, please. Secondly, in Brazil, presumably any revised guidance will come from the operator, not yourself, and tends to happen whenever the operator updates the market next year, and any comments before seem somewhat irrelevant in my view. But so I'm not quite sure whether you can actually tell me anything new on Carcara, which is actually my question. I'm looking at your drilling schedule now. Was the second phase starting in the second half of 15? And I'm just trying to get comfortable whether 2018 is still the year for first commercial production. And then how does the drilling of G play into this as well? Thank you.
Thomas, I will start with the second question first and then back to the first one. Carcara. Carcara was, we are quite excited, and you remember our happiness when we announced the Carcara discovery, no? And we have good reasons for it. However, there is one thing that nobody is prepared to take, is any kind of operational risk. No? That is not even assumed, no, under any scenario. What we are doing is we need to have, in order to assess whether the quality of the reservoir that we have, whether it is extended to the total reservoir, or what is, or whether the Carcara discovery was simply a high quality hotspot in the reservoir. That's the question that we have. The optimists say that the reservoir is looking at all the data that we have will be told with high quality in all its volume. The pessimists say that it's just a small hot spot in the, around the well that we discovered, that we drilled. So the reason of delay has nothing to be with us, as neither with the operator. We wish we had them. It was to do with the availability of a rig that is in the locality with the DST equipment, managed pressure system installed. So that's the issue. What are we doing is recently we started to drill a well, but we had a mechanical problems with the rig in a pre-reservoir section of the well. So we had to remove the rig from the area. Then we are digging a second rig now, and then we will drill the complete rig in the second part of the year. Then follows DST, and that's it. In the meantime, what we are doing, we are already engineering the facilities for that pressure environment, because the FPSO has to be is not a standard FPSO, so you are working on it to advance the timing. Declaration of commerciality, unless ANP gives us more time, is in 2015, late 2015. So if that happens, our target production is 3 years later, 2018, early 2019. That's the target as of today, unless we have either good or bad surprises that make us change these targets. As far as Mozambique, you are aware of it is that the total discoveries were about 85 TCFs of gas in place, distributed between Mamba, Coral, and Agulha, of which in Coral there are slightly above 30 TCFs of gas, so quite a lot of gas. So the issue of development in the Rovuma Basin is not reserves, is infrastructure. So and that's what our focus has to be. So we
my question is on HOAs, heads of agreements for offtakes.
No. So
whether you've secured any?
Let me tell you. What is going on now is what we call the awareness. So the consortium has gone around the traditional buyers, has presented the project so that they know that project is going to happen, that we try to understand what are the pricing formulas that they will be willing to buy. But before we have a clear schedule for the development of the project, which comes out from the engineering that is going on, it is very difficult to have committed HOAs.
Okay, so basically you have no HOAs right now.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
But we have, let me tell you, but we are confident that it is not the market that will limit the development of the project. It's the development of the reserves at this stage.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Thomas. So I understand that we've answered all the questions. Thank you for and thank you for asking them. It is now time for us to close this meeting. Before we end the day, I would like once again to reaffirm our commitment to the development of our main upstream projects that we discussed this morning. We are working alongside our partners to ensure that the projects are executed on time. And I think that is one of our main focuses, executing on time what we are telling you that we are going to do. We also continue to pay great focus to our development projects, which are still in the pre-sanction phase. It's moving them from pre-sanction to sanction phase that will create value to our shareholders. Although these projects are at different stages of appraisal, we are de-risking intensively Yara, Jupiter, and Carcará at this time, and they should contribute to our production growth over the coming years. I would also like to take this opportunity to formally, and I emphasize that, to formally invite all of you to our 2015 Capital Markets Day, which will take place in London on the 10th of March. As you know, on this day, we will provide an update on our main projects, as well as an update on the financial outlook for the coming years. If we have any strategic evolution in our present think, that would be the day for us to share with you any evolution from our present strategy. I speak on behalf of the entire management team that I have the privilege to lead when I say I hope that we see you there on the 10th of March next year. Thank you, my friends. And we talk through these means within 3 months' time. Bye-bye.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.